And this time it is Ben Webster from Waterloo, joint position in the University and the Perimeter Institute. And the title is, I guess, title Tilting Bundles and 3D Field Theories, something like that, yeah?
Yep, I think that's what
okay,
I wrote. Good enough?
Okay, go ahead.
All right, thanks. And thanks to everyone in Kansas for coming. I'm sorry I couldn't come in person, but it was just a little too complicated, a few too many flights, missing a few too many classes. So I appreciate you guys doing this. Maybe we can do some more in the future. All right, so indeed, what I want to talk about is tilting bundles, generators, whatever you want, and 3D field theory. So the rough idea of my talk is that I'm sort of interested in a few different fields. One of the ones I really like is algebraic geometry. And one of the most basic things you study in algebraic geometry is the category of coherent sheaves on some variety, projective, or maybe something that's a resolution of something affine, let's say. And on the other hand, I also like to study representation theory. And that involves studying things like modules over some ring. All right, and the sad fact is there's some sort of terrible ocean with, you know, big rocks and lightning and monsters who are gonna eat you between these two, because sadly, the coherent sheaves on a non-affine variety essentially can never be written as also the category of modules over a ring. So maybe I'll actually write this as a proposition. If X has a projective subvariety of dimension greater than zero, then the category of coherent sheaves on X is not equivalent to the category of finitely generated A modules for any ring A. So this is sad. Let me give you a really quick sketch of the proof. So if I had an equivalence between coherent sheaves and finitely generated A modules, then I would have some really special coherent sheaf. Then I would have a coherent sheaf T that had a cool property. It was projective, and every other sheaf could be resolved by it, right? Since every A module has a free resolution, I would have the situation that every coherent sheaf G could be written as a quotient of some sum of copies of T plus with, and I could continue my resolution using copies of T. And this is just, I turn G into an A module using my equivalence, and then I take a free resolution of that A module. All right. But there's a problem here, which is if L is an ample line bundle on my projective subvariety. So they should give this projective subvariety a name, Y, then Hom from T to L, thought of as a coherent sheaf on all of X, take some big power of it, is zero for n sufficiently large. So we're simply out of luck. If you think about this a little more carefully, you can even prove that in this situation, the category of coherent sheaves has no interesting projective objects. So somehow categories of coherent sheaves are very far away from categories of modules over a ring if you're thinking in usual category theory. And that's very disappointing for those of us who would rather think about algebras than categories of coherent sheaves. C'est la vie. But we don't just have to calmly accept that this happened. There is a fix. So there's nothing that's projective, but we can ask for something that's close to projective. So weaker condition is what's called a tilting generator. So this is a coherent sheaf T such that, well, so one property is that the x of this guy with itself is zero for all higher x. All right, so that's a weakening of the projective property, right? Being projective would mean that this was zero whenever I put any other module here, but it at least has trivial x with itself. And the other thing I want is that every other coherent sheaf can be written as a complex of these guys, but this condition makes it clear that it can't just be a resolution like this. So for all coherent sheaves G, there exists a complex where I'm allowed to have things in negative degree. So I have some number of copies of T in degree minus K, some number of copies of T in degree N minus K plus 1, some number of copies, et cetera. I think I can put it here. And this complex has cohomology, which is just G in degree zero. And nowhere else. So what this says is that every coherent sheaf can be built out of this guy, but not in quite as nice a way as if you had had free resolutions, where you might have to write it as the kernel of some map from T to T or some more complicated complex. All right, are there any questions about this? So,
what do you mean by nowhere else?
I just mean that its cohomology is trivial in all other degrees. So if you want to be fancy, it's quasi-isomorphic to the complex where G is concentrated in degree zero and everything else is trivial. All right.
So these are all statements about a billion categories.
Sorry?
These are all statements about a billion categories.
Yes.
Is there a meaning for the tilting generator in terms of like the derived category?
That was literally the next thing I was going to say. Theorem, if T is a tilting generator, and A is its endomorphism algebra. And I think to be very careful about this, I should actually make it the opposite endomorphism algebra. Then I can look at the bounded derived category of coherent sheaves and the bounded derived category of finitely generated A modules. So because I'm putting coherent sheaves here, I have to say finitely generated A modules. I think roughly the same thing is true as if I had put quasi-coherent in all A modules. So there are functors in two different directions. So I have a functor this way, which is take your favorite coherent sheaf and take R hom with respect to tau with it. And I have the adjoint, which is if I have an A module, then I can tensor that with tau over A. And these are equivalences of derived categories. If you're not extremely comfortable with derived categories, the important thing here is that I can turn a complex of coherent sheaves into a complex of A modules and vice versa. And the functor is just take that complex of where all the summons are T and replace each copy of T with A. So if you think about—
Ben, excuse me, what's the assumption on X?
What is the assumption on X? Oh, I mean, I knew I was gonna sort of screw this up somewhere.
It's your talk. Can do that.
Yeah. No. Let me just say you should not trust me to have, you know, not forgotten any assumptions on X. I mean, I'll only be interested in X proj of a finitely generated ring. Okay? So I think that will get me out of worrying about any sort of bad situations. I'm not assuming that it's a projective variety because this ring might be complicated in degree zero, but let me just add this assumption and then I will worry less. And you might have to, in more general situations, start throwing in assumptions like A has finite global dimension, et cetera. So I did look up a version of this theorem in a paper to try to make sure I wasn't missing an assumption somewhere.
So is it fine if it's not generated in degree one?
Sorry, I'm not assuming that this ring is generated in degree one. I'm not assuming it is one dimensional in degree zero. This basically means I have an affine variety and then I have something mapping down to it by a projective map. And that's always sort of the situation I'm gonna wanna be in, where I have an affine variety, and then I take a resolution of singularities of it, for example, or maybe some other projective map. Okay, any questions? So by thinking about derived categories, by thinking about complexes, I can save my theorem, and I can answer questions about ka of X in terms of questions about modules, but it always has to be things about complexes. So let's do an example. So an example, which ultimately is due to Balanson. I'm not sure he would have stated it exactly this way. Consider P1 and consider the vector bundle O plus O minus 1. All right. And this is a tilting generator. All right, and let me just give you some indication of why this is true. So axed I of tau with its of t with itself, that's actually the sheaf cohomology on P1 of T tensor T check. So it's the higher cohomology on P1 of O of 1 plus O minus 1 plus two copies of O, and indeed that's 0. And then to show that it generates, this is sort of a nice example, if A is non-negative, then I can write OA as a quotient of copies of the structure sheaf, and the kernel is copies of O of minus 4. All right, so this is the obvious map where you just look at all sections of this guy, map in that many copies of O, and you can check that the kernel is a bunch of copies of O of minus 1. And on the other hand, if A is negative, I have to write my complex the other way. Then O of A is a sub of O minus 1, the minus A, and the quotient is a bunch of copies of O. Okay, so you can, it's a basic exercise in algebraic geometry to check that I have short exact sequences like this. So what this sort of tells me is that, yes, I can send any one of these guys to a module over x of this guy, but, so what does the, yeah, let's actually go through what this tells us. This tells us that O of A maps to the co-kernel of a map from actually, I'm not going to try to write this down. It's just going to get too messy. I didn't prepare it in my notes, so it's fine.
I mean, you can skip. I mean, this is sort of course, it's not Bellinson. It's essentially, I don't know, Kronecker, if you just
okay.
Definition. So you can skip really this example.
Okay, fair enough. There's a slightly more interesting variation on this example, which is, what if X is instead T star P1? So this is no longer a projective variety, but it has a nice map down to an affine variety, to the nil cone of SL2, so to 2x2 nilpotent matrices. Everyone's favorite example of a symplectic resolution of singularities. This also has a tilting bundle given by the same line bundles pulled back from P1. So I'm just going to
do you consider, do you consider in such cases all coherent sheaves or coherent sheaves supported on the compact subset?
All coherent sheaves. Though, of course, you can, you know, use the equivalents to also tell you about coherent sheaves supported on the compact subset, right? So being supported on the zero section here, right, is a statement about being killed by a sufficiently high power of all functions on this set of matrices that vanish at zero. And you know, that also gives me an ideal in the endomorphism algebra A. So statements like being supported on a formal neighborhood of a fiber translate into statements about being killed by some power of a two-sided ideal. But I am talking about all coherent sheaves. Hold back from P1. All right, what does A look like in this case? So I can write it as a quiver algebra where these two dots correspond to the two summons. So I'm going to have zero length paths that correspond to the projection on O and the projection on O of minus one. And then I'm going to have arrows that correspond to maps. So if this guy is O and this guy is O minus one, well, there's a map from O minus one to O for each coordinate. There's a multiplication by the two coordinates. And there are maps back the other direction given by ddx0 and ddx1 thought of as functions on the cotangent bundle. And the interesting relation is that x0 ddx0 plus x1 ddx1 equals zero because this is parallel to C star orbits in C2. So this is a vector, this gives you a trivial vector field on P1. So this is actually giving you a relation in functions on here because vector fields you can think of as functions on here. All right, and so your question about being supported somewhere, right? X0 ddx1 and x1 ddx0 are global functions on T star P1. So they also give me elements of the endomorphism ring in here. And I can ask that these guys act nilpotently. That's one way of imposing the condition of being supported on the zero section. All right, any questions?
So you already switched entirely to the derived setting, yeah? So because this, I assume that this coherent story was sort of pedagogical introduction, or do you still want to keep a memory about the heart of the T structure?
Oh, well, I mean, of course, it's interesting to think about what happens with the heart of the T structure. But, you know, what I found here is here I have an algebra whose derived category of representations is the same as the derived category of representations on T star of P1. But by this theorem, it can't be an equivalence of abelian categories. So instead, you get some very interesting other way of embedding some abelian category in that heart. And actually, there are many such embeddings because, of course, this isn't the only such tilting bundle. Anytime you take O of A plus O of A minus one, you get a tilting bundle. And these are very interesting T structures on the category of coherent sheaves. For example, if you're interested in stability conditions, there are many interesting stability conditions which are compatible with these T structures, which maybe I can say a tiny bit about later. We'll see how much time I have. I'm already used up quite a bit of my time. All right, any questions? All right. Whoops. Maybe I'll just note, I won't write out the definitions because I'm running short on time. There was an already established notion of sort of connecting commutative singular varieties with non-commutative algebras called non-commutative prepent resolutions of singularities. And this tilting bundle story can also be seen in this framework. So just note, there exists notion of non-commutative Krepin resolution. And it's a theorem of Vandenberg. That if T is a tilting bundle, and for sort of reasons which are maybe slightly silly, but I think they're kind of necessary, and L is a line bundle, which is a summand of T, then A, this endomorphism ring, is a non-commutative Krepin resolution of I of course forgot some of my hypotheses because I was trying to go too fast. If X mapping to X0 is a resolution of singularities, and X0 is affine. Okay, so then this endomorphism ring is a non-commutative Krepin resolution of the affine variety X0. So I just wanted to connect this. This is sort of a pre-existing notion. So really what a tilting bundle is telling you is when a non-commutative resolution of singularities and a commutative resolution have the same derived category, which is something people have worried about a lot. All right. Okay, so this is sort of, I don't know, I think this is a cool notion, but how do we find out about them, right? So here we had this horrible sea of turmoil between our two worlds, and actually, there's a bridge between them. And this bridge was helpfully built for us by Kaledin and Bezrukhovnikov. I'll draw his stick figures here.
Which one of these Kaledin?
I mean, if you want, I can erase Bezrukhovnikov. He's a little bit of a ghost, but you know, he did very many interesting things in the picture as well. So, but yes, the sort of most general form is from a paper of Kaledin's, which drew very strongly on his work with Bezrukhovnikov. But this bridge is still a little bit scary because the middle of this bridge is in characteristic P. Okay, so things happening here are in characteristic zero. And things happening here are in characteristic zero. Right, everything that was happening there was in characteristic zero. But somehow to get between these, on the bridge that Kaledin built for us, you have to step into characteristic P in this way that's very sort of dissatisfying. And let me give you a very rough sense of how you do this. So this is all constructed around doing quantization of a symplectic variety in characteristic P. So I want to assume now X is symplectic and pi from X to X0 is a resolution of singularities. with X0 affine. And I have a contracting GM action. So I'm writing GM because, of course, I want to be able to do this in characteristic P as well. But in the usual world of complex algebraic geometry, I would just say C star.
So contracting GM action where?
On everything, on X, X0, equivariant, with the map being equivariant. I mean, there's some general nonsense by which if you have the action on X0, it lifts to X. All right, so the, of course, most popular example of this is the Springer resolution. If I have T star G mod B, that's my X, and that maps down to the nil cone, which is my X0. But there are many other of these. For example, I can take, instead of T star of G mod B, I can take T star of G mod P. I have to be a little more careful about what goes here. There are guys constructed of these by intersecting with Slotovy slices. In particular, the Slotovy slices themselves have nice resolutions. I can take the Hilbert scheme of C2, or more generally, the resolution of C2 mod a finite group. And of course, what this maps down to is sim n of C2. And of course, everyone's favorite, Nakajima quiver varieties. And there are these guys I like very much called hypertoric varieties.
So it is mapped to where, Nakajima quiver variety?
It is what?
You present kind of symplectic resolution, so where do you map Nakajima quiver variety?
To singular Nakajima quiver varieties, right? So Nakajima quiver varieties, they're constructed as a GIT quotient, and you send the GIT parameter to zero. But of course, in general, with all of these, you can take X, look at functions on it, and take spec of that. And for example, with T star G mod P, there's actually a slightly complicated story about what it is you get when you do that. But in general, that's always the right thing to do. And you know, with Nakajima quiver varieties, if the weight isn't dominant, there's some slightly complicated story about what happens. But yeah, where they, so the kind of easy answer is that what they map to is their affinization, but that affinization has a nice realization. The Nakajima quiver variety, it's a moduli space of objects in some category that preserve a stability condition. And the thing it's mapping to is a moduli space of semi-simple objects in the same category. All right, whew, okay. So in this situation, what's the advantage of being symplectic? The advantage being symplectic gets me is that there are star products. There are non-commutative deformations of the multiplication that take into account the symplectic structure. So, so Kaleiden's recipe is quantize X. That is, construct product on the the structure sheaf, which is deformed such that if I multiply two things in the star product and then that's their usual product plus h times half of their Poisson bracket plus higher order stuff. I have to be a little bit careful here about this half if my characteristic is very small.
So far your x was complex. Where is the finite characteristic?
So it makes sense to do this over any field. So yes, I've mostly been thinking, so.
No, if it has characteristic non-zero, you should be really.
You know, what you should think about is x is defined over the integers. All right, and yes, this star product exists when you consider the complex variety defined by those equations, right? Defined over z just means I have equations for it with integer coefficients. I can consider those over the complex numbers. I can also consider those in FP. And I don't want to get dragged down in the details of this because the whole point is you don't really have to do this, at least in some important cases. So I'm mostly telling you this to emphasize how confusing and complicated it is. I quantize x, now think over FP. So I can take the same equations, consider them in FP, and I can do this quantization in that world. And it has this effect that the quantization has a big center. And I mean, the framework in which I do this quantization forces this to happen as a big center. The example you should always think about is if I look at over FP at the algebra generated by x and ddx with the usual relations that I learned from calculus. So in this case, x to the p and ddx to the p are both central. So I can think of these guys as giving me a copy of functions on two-dimensional affine space. So I can think of this non-commutative ring as an algebra over polynomials in FP, x to the p, ddx to the p. All right, when I have a module over polynomial ring, I can sheafify it. I can turn this into a sheaf on x itself. All right. So in that case, that would mean I think of this as functions on A2, and I obtain a vector bundle of degree p squared. Over A2. So in general here, I get, this is a vector bundle of degree p to the dimension of x. All right, so just think about that by analogy with here.
Sheafifying is over FP or is over C?
This is over everything's in FP. We're in the middle of the bridge now.
Gotcha.
So we have to do things over FP. Oh, I lost my eraser up there. All right. So let me not get too bogged down in this. This sheafification is almost the endomorphisms of a tilting generator.
And Ben, excuse me, I have a question. In this example of yours, what's x and x zero?
So I mean, think about T star G mod B mapping to N. It's X is a symplectic resolution. X zero is the affine thing it's resolving.
In the example of this,
I mean, this is X and X zero are both A two, right?
But okay, yeah, thank you.
So, yeah, this. The whole point is to do an example where you can actually see what's going on, because if you just read the general version, you have no idea what's happening. All right, so then, what am I on? I'm on step four. Let's see. So the sheafification, let A twiddle be the sheafification. This is almost so close to being equal to endomorphisms of a vector bundle. It really is not. And you can see that in this case because, okay, any vector bundle on A2 is going to be trivial. So if it were endomorphisms of a vector bundle, I would have that those differential operators would be a matrix algebra over polynomials in two variables in FP. But those differential operators are a domain, and a matrix algebra definitely isn't. But somehow that's the only problem. So let me just say, use magic to find tau such that morally this is true. And what do I mean by morally it's true? It's true on formal neighborhoods of fibers of this map.
So, sorry, what is A tilde? Say again.
okay. Sorry. Find tau such that on all fibers of x to x0, we have that A hat restricted to the fiber is isomorphic to end of tau restricted to the fiber. So we can't sort of globally find a tau that works, but there's a tau that works locally in a little neighborhood of every fiber. And then step five, I'm still working over characteristic P. So step five, lift this to characteristic zero. Okay, so this is just awful.
What's the magic?
Oh, the magic. So the magic is just doing some computations in the Brouwer group. It's not extremely bad. It's just sort of, you can check that, I mean, this is an Azumaya algebra. Its class in the Brouwer group just isn't zero, but it's zero on restriction to every fiber. That's mainly what I mean, but I also have to do some futzing around of like, oh, but there's one most important fiber here, which is the one over the GM fixed point. So I really do it there, and then I smooth everything out using the GM action. Oh. So I don't know, you know, this is one of these constructions where it's sort of a miracle that it works, but it's very hard to know what to do with it. So I don't have an enormous amount of time, so I shouldn't push things too long, but let me try to give you some indication of how we can fix this. So there's one class of these symplectic resolutions which I'm most excited about and which contains some of the most important examples. So these are what are called Coulomb branches. And these include all type A or A hat Nakajima quiver varieties. And that maybe sounds specific. But this is a very big class, which contains within it, for example, the Springer resolution for GLN and all variants. So also GLN, slow to V slices, intersections of slow to V slices with orbits, but always for GLN. And it includes all the Hilbert schemes of C2 or even C2 modicyclic group and then resolved. So these are finite type A Nakajima quiver varieties. These are affine type A Nakajima quiver varieties. And there's sort of one other really nice example, which is these hypertoric varieties. I'm sure there are other people in the audience who could come up with other ones, but I think these are the most exciting examples. And in particular, I need some extra hypotheses, and these satisfy my extra hypotheses. All right, so given the time, let me not try to say a lot about how to define these.
Ben, but general Coulomb branch, like in Braverman, Finkelberg.
Yes, so this is Coulomb branches in the sense of BFN. But I need something else, which is the general BFN construction gives you some very singular affine variety, and then a recipe which sometimes produces a resolution of it and sometimes doesn't. Sometimes they literally have no symplectic resolution. And these are all examples where their recipe produces a resolution. And it's the already known resolutions of these guys. So where these come out of is a certain three-dimensional field theory.
When you say field, you assume what? Topological?
Let me say gauge theory. Okay, so 3D.
How many supersymmetries?
Gauge theory, that's N equals 4, so 4 supersymmetries. And I have some matter content V and a gauge group G. So these hypertoric varieties are when the gauge group is a torus. And these other examples come out of the V and G you use to construct Nakajima quiver varieties, but not the same V and G, like all the indexing set is mixed up. So it's very closely related if you know the construction of Nakajima quiver varieties as GIT quotients, but it's not the same on the nose. It's not literally the same V and the same G. It's the one for some other Nakajima quiver variety. All right. And what's the best way to say this in a couple of minutes? So let me just say the important thing about this is there's some category. C. So this is the category of D modules on the Laurent polynomials in V mod the Laurent polynomials in G. So this is sort of a dangerous thing to be doing because this is an extremely infinite dimensional space. It's an infinite dimensional space modded out by an infinite dimensional group. But one can still do some calculations in this space. All right, and even better, using some factorizability, this is a monoidal category. And all of this stuff is things where the consequences of it I am going to use are things I can justify carefully, but I wouldn't claim I can justify carefully that this category exists and has.
No, this category perfectly exists.
Okay.
There's absolutely no problem.
All right. Does the monoidal structure perfectly exist?
Which monoidal structure do you mean? Like the usual tensor product?
No, I mean like fusing. Like.
What do you mean by fusing?
I mean you have two disks and you smush the disks.
Well, then it's not the monoidal. It's a factorization category. So it's not. I mean, you should really not mix those things up. So there's no monoidal category. There's no factorization category. They're not the same.
All right.
So in this sense, it is not a monoidal category.
All right. Well, there are some situations where
it
makes sense to tensor some objects. Let me say that.
It's in any case an analytic procedure, like going from factorization category to monoidal category. This requires computing Moulin problem or something.
Okay. So my point is, I'm probably going to say some things which are slight lies, but they make much more sense than if I tried to tell you the truth. So. In here, there's an object I'll call x0, and this is the push forward of functions from taking the Taylor series in T and modding out by the Taylor series in G. All right. Oh, let me not call this x, z0. So this BFN Coulomb branch is spack of the self x of this guy. All right, so any other object in this category gives me a module over the BFN Coulomb branch by taking x with it. And even better, there's a series of objects. Z0 is the first one, Z1, Z2. Z3, such that the projective coordinate ring of this resolution x is the x from Z0 to the sum of these guys. Or I positive integers. And you might ask.
Z3 and then, it continues, right?
Yes.
I was just confused about it.
Yes. Sorry, it goes on forever. Yeah, sorry. And how is this a ring? Well, this is the point where it makes sense to think about tensoring these guys. And maybe there are some lies involved in saying this, but this is sort of the right way to think about it, or at least a way to think about it, that there's something similar to a monoidal structure, at least, where you can think that tensoring two of these gives you I plus j, and you use that to construct the multiplication here. And maybe Sasha can tell me what the actual structure I'm using here is. That's fine.
So it's not any kind of composition?
Well, it is. I should have put the sums. I should have put the sums on the other side. Doesn't really matter. So it is composition, but of course you can't compose something here. If I have a map from, Z2 to Z0 and a map from Z3 to Z0, how am I supposed to compose them? I have to tensor this guy to get a map from Z5 to Z3, and then I can compose that with the map to Z0. All right? So again, maybe this is slightly lying, but this is the sort of thing you should imagine.
Right, and it's symmetric, so it doesn't matter whether you tensor with identity on the right or on the left.
No, and that has to do with the fact that it's a three-dimensional field theory. So I'm sort of using my three dimensions, and this involves kind of choosing some spatial slice. And so I'm doing something that looks not totally symmetric because it involves my choice of spatial slice, but I actually have three dimensions to move things around. All right. So where does this get us? This means for any other D module, M on this loop space, VT mod VG, I can construct a coherent sheaf. And the way I construct this is I look at the module x dot from the sum of the zi's into M. All right, and I can compose these. I can make that into a graded module over this ring in exactly the same way. All right. So this is the module over the projective coordinate ring. And I'm pretty much out of time. Like I said, I really shouldn't go over or my daughter will be very unhappy. Let me just try to get to the point. Here, in the situations I just erased, so sorry about that. So type A and A hat, quiver varieties and hypertoric varieties. There exists M such that the, I shouldn't say the because it depends on some choices, but the Kaleiden tilting generator is of this form. And this guy M is really not so bad. So M is a direct sum of push forwards of functions from certain UIs mod the Iwahori mapping to VT mod G. So it's a geometrically pretty natural D module. And so M can be constructed of this form, and I don't have any time to explain how you calculate its endomorphism algebra, but I promise you, you can. It's a very nice computation where you basically look at the affine flag varieties attached to this guy, have fun with Schubert calculus, and think about the KLR algebra. And is there anything else I want to say? Are there any, maybe I'll just stop now, and if people want to hear more about something, they can ask questions.
What can you describe the resulting coherent sheaf on the?
I mean, only in the sense that I can tell you what the module is. So at the moment, I don't understand this extremely well. In the hypertoric case, I can tell you it's sort of a collection of line bundles, and it's easy to describe, and it's like exactly what this SAM and Halpern-Leisner magic window story would tell you. But in other types, it seems to be very strange things. So I tried, for T-star PN, I know what it is, and it's the same as the, you know, the sum of the O of ones. So it's a sum of things whose rank is the order of the vial group of G, right? Basically because of this Iwahori here. So it's sort of something which kind of generically is a vector bundle of rank. I mean, it is a vector bundle and it has rank, the sum of things whose rank is equal to the vial group. Of course, sometimes these guys are not indecomposable and you get smaller things.
How general is the construction of M? I mean, I said that somehow, in the end, in order to do what you want to do, you need to assume that there is a resolution, but financially, might happen that the construction of M is actually more general than that.
So, yes, this construction makes sense in general. But
like completely general, so...
I mean, you can always define these objects, right? I mean, the UI, it's just you look at some fractional co-characters and you look at the positive weight spaces for them. So I like don't have time to write it all out, but it's something...
But there's some combinatorics probably involved, I don't know, it's combinatorics in general.
Yeah, it's very general.
So any V and any G.
For any V and any G, there you can write down this... D module, that makes perfectly good sense. And so for any one of these resolutions coming from this kind of store, you get a coherent sheaf. So the reason I have to assume, so this works whenever I have a resolution, but I need to assume I have a resolution because if I don't have something smooth, I can't use the Kaleiden story at all.
Right, I understand, but the actual family thing is completely general.
And in particular, so the you know, the main thing I get out of comparing with this Kaleiden story is to show that these guys are generators, right? It's in general pretty hard to prove that something is a generator, and Kaleiden kind of uses this magic argument where you look at quantizations of different parameters, and if you look at the quantizations in a line, there's some fixed upper bound on the number of those that can be bad, so once your prime is big, you have to have one that gives you a tilting generator.
Ben, but I'm a bit confused. How do you compare with Kaleiden after all?
So the kind of key to comparing with Kaleiden is that, so you're looking at this X, and then when you deform, so the way you deform is by turning on a C star action. So I mean, I'm hiding a bunch of stuff here, but the sort of key observation is that deformation comes from turning on loop rotation. And a slightly different version of loop rotation for different quantization parameters. So how the loop is going to act on V of T isn't totally fixed, and there's some flavor in the choice of how you do that. These UIs mod the Iwahoris show up as the fixed points of P torsion in the loop rotation. So, you know, obviously all the details of how the comparison works take a lot longer. I don't have time for it, but this is kind of the key observation. Like, why would these guys be showing up and how do you figure out what are the right ones? As you look at the fixed points of loop rotation. And if that sounds really weird, it's maybe a little more helpful to look at the vector bundle on the affine Grassmannian given by G round brackets T cross this guy mod G of T. All right, so I mean, somehow my proof went through, you know, to really get things right, I sort of did a detailed calculation of what the endomorphisms here are and compared those with the representation theory of the quantization in characteristic P. But somehow, like, where the calculation gets captured is in looking at these fixed points of rotation by the P torsion points. So, you know, somehow if you're looking at cohomology with coefficients in characteristic zero, you can usually localize the full fixed points. In characteristic P, you kind of should only look at fixed points of the P torsion.
So, okay, any questions here in Kansas? So, Kansas is silent, so any questions on the others?
So was the UI dependent on P here or not?
So, this is a good question. The UIs, they depend on the quantization parameter, but actually once you start changing P, you just get a bunch more copies of the same summons. So, what ends up happening is you have some torus and you have a like sub-torus arrangement pulled out of it. And your UIs correspond to chambers in that arrangement. And what happens when you look at a particular P is you just look at which chamber the P torsion points in. So as you increase P, you just get more and more points in each chamber, and you get sort of more and more redundant stuff.
Sorry, and you said that you need to use this comparison with Palladio in order to prove that your thing actually is a tilting generator.
Yeah.
So the generating part is the part.
Right. That sort of, I don't directly prove that this guy gives me a tilting generator. I prove that it's the same as the Kaleiden tilting generator. And then,
can you prove that it has no higher x from itself?
That's a good question. Probably if I was really careful about the Frobenius splitting. So one of the things you need to check.
So you actually do this stuff in characteristic P also?
Yeah.
Do you use this Lonergan's thesis in some way or?
Yes, right? So, I think I know now how to prove Lonergan's thesis in an easier way. Right? Somehow step one is to do a quantization which is Frobenius constant. And Lonergan's thesis is, doing this quantization by loop rotation is actually the kind of quantization that Bezrukhovnikov and Kaleiden want you to do. So somehow, like, if you didn't have Lonergan's thesis, you wouldn't be able to know that you were doing the right thing in step one.
So some maybe a stupid question to you or to Sasha, I don't know. This monoidal category of D modules, is it somehow can be related to something in characteristic P kind of a priori without finding the generator, just equivalent to some category in characteristic P? Without kind of comparing the Kaleiden generator with the one which you found?
I don't think so. I mean, somehow, right, like one thing I was sweeping under the rug here is I wrote this down about X in this D module category, but of course, if you go read the paper, they say, it's the homology of this space, which then if you sort of go read Ginsburg and Chris, you realize is computing this X group. But of course, when I want to do things in characteristic P, I want to take their space and look at its homology over a field of characteristic P, which doesn't have any obvious interpretation in terms of the D modules. There is still some part of this where it's sort of a little unclear how to interpret it geometrically. That maybe instead of D modules, I should have said constructible sheaves, and then that actually would have made sense in characteristic P. But somehow the physicists always seem to say D modules.
So, okay, more questions here. So it looks like we are fine. So there is a reason to look at your papers after your talk. Well, thank you very much.
Well, I can always take more questions via email. All right. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Ben.